Hello, everyone. My name is Kanai Kapadia, and this is Hindsight. Hindsight is produced by KGK and Company, a data-driven value creation partner who guarantees client return on investment. To learn more about the firm and how prospective clients can receive a complimentary one-day assessment of where your company may have overlooked revenue and profit opportunities, go online to www.kgkcompany.com. On this episode of Hindsight, I'm joined by Dan LeBlanc, CEO of Dacity. Dan's built a career of straddling the fence between business leader and data expert. So aside from a foray into a beer distribution business, it's no surprise he's leading a company that is giving direct-to-consumer businesses and multi-channel consumer businesses a way to unify their data and to gain insight from it. Dan, thanks for coming on the show. When we spoke before, you alluded to there being a big shift in the business environment for direct-to-consumer brand. Can you expand on what you were referring to?
The two biggest shifts of the last year have been consumer brands are now very, very much like B2B SaaS. I can no longer worry about growth. Now I need to focus on profitability too. So you're seeing consumer brands having to make that shift. The other piece is really around, I don't know that I can do it all just online, that I can only be digital. And so there's a huge kind of mass in terms of how do I get into these large retailers, Target, Costco, Walmart, Ulta, Sephora, grocery, you know, Kroger, Albertsons. How do I get into these different large retail chains? May not be as profitable from a unit perspective, but the volume helps you from your non-variable costs, like make your G&A lower, because now you don't really need to add another finance person, hopefully, or you don't need to add another CEO. So it helps kind of make that more rational, those kind of costs more rational, and increase your sales. So it becomes really important to kind of get into these retailers. And so I've seen a huge shift there. And so for us, it's important to be part of that Shopify ecosystem, but it's also important to be part of the Walmart ecosystem, to be the place that kind of brings all these sales channels together.
That's interesting to sort of see it come back almost to traditional brick and mortar distributors or retailers. Can you talk about what Dacity is from a market perspective and your vision for the company?
We've always been pretty clear on what we wanted to do. And the challenge has been, how do we get there? My sort of vision has always been consumer brands need to be data driven, or at least have data to make decisions, optimal decisions that include data. I don't think every decision should be made off of data, but you need to have data to help you make that decision. And the challenge that I've seen throughout my career is having access to it without having to spend a ton of money. And I think that's really been the vision that I've had, and wanting to be able to get to a point where you can have really access to everything. For us, it started off in the digital space. Our big focus is now, how do we extend and expand into everywhere you sell your product? So not just on your own .com and like Amazon and Walmart.com, et cetera, but how do we think about, are you in a store at Target, or are you in a store at like a Whole Foods or a Kroger or something like that? So I think about it from that perspective, because it's only once you have that and you can start to think about things like, where should I send my product? And part of it is, my experience at Pro Flowers, or really the other brands, where we had to live through all of these challenges where, crap, we missed FedEx cutoff at 5 o'clock today. We told you you were going to get your flowers first thing tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., but we missed the cutoff. We just had a crappy experience, because what if it was your wife's anniversary and you're trying to have flowers delivered before she got to work the next day? Well, we just screwed that up for you. You're going to be the hero, and now you're like zero, right? These are the things that you start thinking about as a brand. That's why for me, like, the data is so important. It's not just about the sales and marketing. It's so many different aspects. And so my vision's always been, that's all separate. In all different places, it's going to be hard to get a perspective of what's going on with your businesses and everything running smoothly. And that's where a business needs to get to, is being able to check and say, yep, everything's green. I'm moving on, and I might think about strategically, where are we trying to go in the next 6 months or year or next week? But if something's not green, you need to stop and check, because that's a concern for your business. And that's whether you're a consumer brand or whether you're honestly a SaaS company. The data sources are different. The metrics are different. We're trying to do the same things around not only things like how's our sales marketing funnel, but how quickly do we respond to tickets? How quickly do we close them? Where are the things that are broken in our business in terms of being able to resolve our customers' issues?
I saw that one of Dasity's competitors, Polar Analytics, just completed a funding round. And investor interest in your space is both a good and a bad thing. But as you think about success into the future, what are the key success factors in your mind?
I worry less about the financial return and more about helping the brands. Because I think if we do a good job of supporting the brands and they grow, our success is going to follow. And so that requires us to go raise more money. Great. If it doesn't, that's great too. So I like to think of, we have to focus on making sure that our brands are successful. They have the information that they need and that they're successful using it. That will kind of drive our ability to be successful.
I'm sure that customer-centric approach actually works very well. You're just focused on making them win. That's really all that matters.
Yes. Right. It makes it interesting when we have customers in the same space. I will say that. I've learned a lot about a lot of industries that I didn't necessarily know a lot about before, which is kind of interesting.
What do you mean customers in the same space?
So we have a lot of beauty brands, you know, so take a lot of beauty brands, right? And yeah, we work with some really big ones. We work with a bunch of small ones and they can't all grow to be hundreds of millions, right? They can't all become hundreds of millions beauty brands. That's why I sort of say it's a little bit funny, but the goal for us is to really help them be successful and get the insights because they're all competing for the same shelf space at Ulta and Sephora, right? This is a sort of the challenge, but there's many barriers, right? It's also a product market fit and what do the consumers want from that perspective. But as long as we're each individually helping them grow, it's almost like the VC approach. As long as you get a couple of winners in there, then it's okay. But that's for us, it's, are we helping them on their journey?
Yeah.
Because we have so few, in terms of all the brands that exist, we don't have very much penetration at all. Even at hundreds of brands, there are tens of thousands of brands on Shopify. So there's still a lot of runway for us to be able to grow. Right. So that's why if we take care of these brands and we're doing them a great job in terms of helping them in their journey, then we're going to be successful.
Do you have any stories you can share along those lines where you feel the insights they've gained from either the platform or platform plus agency?
One of the early ones that really got Dasity started was Movement Watches. And this is a great story. Two guys started a Kickstarter, didn't raise capital, knew how to do marketing, and ended up selling their business for over $100 million to Movado. And our key part of the journey was helping them start to access all of their Shopify and marketing data so they could monitor their ad spend. But probably the most important thing was helping them predict their inventory because they got to a point where they didn't have enough cash. If they didn't make regular small buys, they couldn't write a check big enough to get the inventory that they needed. They couldn't write a check big enough once a month to buy futures. So they had to do it every week, because the cash revenue is helping fund them. And so for us to be able to provide that insight where they could project that out very frequently and have it almost real time versus having to have a human go do it, which was very laborious, was really, really important for them. And so I think of that as like a huge win.
I'll put it slightly differently. They were able to increase the frequency of inventory turns in order to lower their cash requirements. And you can only do that if you combine your demand picture with your inventory side. And it's got to be accurate in real time.
Yeah. And your purchase orders, right? It's like, here's your PO. This is when it's expected to be in the house, right? And you're going to have to spend this much money. Here's your sales projection. When do we need to do the next PO? So, because for them, if you're trying to fund yourself, it's a lot easier to go spend $1,000 a time than to go come up with like 10K every 2.5 months. And that was kind of the issue that they're into. You've got a little bit more leniency nowadays that all these like revenue financing companies have come out, but that didn't exist back in 2014, 2015. And so we really helped them there. Now, I think another great success story is being able to provide real-time cost, sales, and traffic to one of our merchants that allows them to move product up and down on the page and to make buying decisions around what new products they're launching. Do they want to rebuy? So they tend to buy, 100 units, 200 units. Is it selling quick? Yep. Okay. The merchandiser wants to go and rebuy that right away.
That's neat.
Things like Amazon inventory allocation between Shopify and Amazon is huge. We help a number of merchants there because that's really challenging. I've manufactured product. Where do I put it? Do I need to send it to my DC or do to my 3PL or do I have to send it into Amazon? How much do I do? Amazon charges me for storage, charges me for all of these things. So this is where insight becomes really valuable in terms of having one sort of combined, unified place for all your data, where all you combine all your data in one place. You start to have those things, you start to have all those different pieces all in one location.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of a no-brainer if you're on spreadsheets. When you think about the larger customers that you're trying to acquire, how does it compare to Stacks in building their own infrastructure?
The building your own, because so much is standard, what I like to think of is, look, we're not going to be your 100% solution. And what I mean by that is out of box, we're probably not going to be 100% of exactly what you need. But we're probably going to be somewhere between 80 and 90% there, because I know things like you're going to want to pull in marketing data. You're probably going to allocate that to orders to do some sort of attribution. You're going to want to calculate lifetime value. You're going to want to know what products people put together. You're going to want to know what your inventory is. You're going to want to know what your sell-through rate is. So we pre-built all that. What I don't know are the little nuances around, oh, you give trial for your subscription as the first box. So you actually don't want that first subscription box to be considered a subscription order. You want the second one. Okay, that's unique to you. The important part is we have the flexibility to do that. So if you go hire a data team, they're going to rebuild all of the 90% from scratch. And maybe they've worked somewhere else and they're going to bring along a little bit of work, but you're going to spend a lot of money. And so what we're trying to say is, look, don't spend that money. Use us. You're going to get to that 90%. Use our agency, or if you have your own person, great, have your own person do it. Or if you want to use a third party, go use a third party. Get that extra 10%. Now you've got your operating system and you just save yourself a whole ton of cash. Go spend it on either product development or sales and marketing. You choose.
Do you save time too?
Absolutely.
Because that's huge. I mean, time value of money over this period of time we're talking about is substantial. Your vision of the future, you described as not just the reporting capability, but being able to get further into the why. Multi-channel attribution being one element of that, that's actually been around for quite some time. What was interesting to me was I thought the data was actually reliable, but the data inadvertently reflects well on one party and poorly on another inside a business, right? So like a good example might be it makes marketing look poorly and sales look good, or sales poorly and marketing good. And so it creates reason for people to discredit the data, which is easy to do if your statistical models or your game theory used to model these things out is so complex that no one in a management team meeting could possibly understand them and agree as to their validity or not, right? So in the multi-channel world, what is it going to take to achieve that vision?
From my opinion, my perspective, it's less of actually a mathematical data issue, and it's more a cultural issue. And here's what I mean by that. So we have to first understand that we're never going to know every single touch point of how a person decided to make the purchase, because there's things that you can't track. Did they talk to a friend? There's no way digitally that you're ever going to know that, or even from, say, an impression perspective. And you can ask the person, and the person's probably not even going to remember everything where they ever saw you. So we have to step back and say, the likelihood that I can be exact is zero. So now we have to say, okay, well, what are the boundaries, or what are the things that got us there? And so that's where you need to look at it in different lenses. Okay, what marketing did I do first touch, last touch? Did I include these channels, not these channels? And you start to come up with shapes and forms. That gives you kind of a different set of potential, I'll say kind of ranges of how these different channels perform. Then you need to kind of take the cultural aspect. And the cultural aspect is really important that you don't create an us versus them. And here's a great example. I used to work with a brand called 5-11 Tactical, and they started opening stores. So they used to be basically selling wholesale. So they sold to other retailers, and then they had their online with Amazon and digital. And they decided that they are going to open stores across the country. And what would you expect? The retail stores cannibalized e-commerce orders.
Yep.
And that created contention because now it's, I'm driving ads and you're telling me to go do this and talk about a store opening and you're stealing my sales, without recognizing that eventually what happened is the fact that store helped create brand awareness that actually increased sales for the overall business. And then they went to buy online and pick up in store. And so it became more of a cultural aspect of like, well, if you buy online and pick up in store, who gets credit for that?
Yeah.
Should you have credit? As a CEO, it's like, do you want to give credit? Because actually you need both teams to work in conjunction to give the customer an amazing experience. And so if you don't have a good cultural aspect, you don't have a good culture, you're going to have these two teams that are competing against each other and creating a crappy experience for the customer that in the end is going to hit your retention. And it's all because you haven't sort of set it up. So I've actually seen it where in certain organizations where they look at them combined, it's like you're both getting credit for it. And so that's kind of more of a cultural aspect. So there's the data side, which is, hey, we're going to go figure that out and how to make good decisions about where we spend our marketing dollars. And then from an individual team, it's trying to have less of that sort of siloed approach towards spending the dollars and getting sort of rewarded for the success of that.
It's certainly important for management teams to think about what's in the best interest of the company. But I think this underscores the importance of drawing accurate conclusions from your data about the causes behind the effect that you're seeing. You mentioned to me before that the expectations of investors, including Dacity's venture partners, has changed dramatically. Can you talk about what changed and the effect it's having?
You need to be focused on profitability. So you've seen a lot of tech companies kind of reduce headcount. So that was certainly one dynamic. The speed at which that changed was tremendously quick, that messaging changed within like 2 to 3 months. And that's really challenging. It's hard to, even if you're a smaller startup, to kind of change dramatically that quickly because you're building plans in your organization. It takes time to kind of adjust that. One of the things that we did was actually launch that agency because when we had all of those people that were helping merchants really understand how to interpret the data and do more than just being that SaaS platform, the expectation for gross margin on a SaaS company is different than it is in a consulting company. And our financials were all together. And so it became really convoluted. And it's like, well, your margins are bad. They're not SaaS margins. So we ran into all of these challenges around what was the expectation. Now that we've split it out, you know, we're technically still one company. It's still the same company. We just keep the books separate. So we have two kind of P&Ls and we have two, and we market it differently for two reasons. One is to make it clear to the customer around, if you're buying the platform, what are you getting? And if you're buying services, what are you getting? And then for us internally to be able to really be clear around what costs go into the SaaS product and what costs go into the service so that we can manage margins differently. Because service margins can be a lot lower and that's okay. And it's better for us to have a SaaS business that has SaaS margins and a service business that has service margins than to be one entity that's neither.
Right, right. It shows you're aware of the two businesses being distinct and separate. It doesn't change your overall return, but it arguably affects the valuation and also your ability to raise more money in the future, right?
Exactly. It's a little bit of a game. Yeah, it's a little bit of an accounting game, right?
You've had senior level roles in the past, but as a first-time SaaS CEO, what resources or mentorship have helped you get to where you are today?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. If you're part of a consumer brand and you tend to be, you know, a little bit more senior, you're going to have some insight into the business overall. So you're going to understand kind of general profitability. Those were things that were important for us at ProFlower. So interesting things like at Valentine's Day, we were actually willing to be negative gross margin on an order, on the first order, knowing that a large percentage of people would come back and buy for Mother's Day. But for Mother's Day, we weren't willing to be first order unprofitable or negative margin because the next repurchase period. And so that would be a lot of math that we would have to understand. It wasn't just on the revenue side. We're talking about margin. So we would have to understand, okay, well, what's our average cost to fulfill? What's our average cost to ship, et cetera? What do we need to put in terms of G&A? So we're a very data-driven organization. So that certainly helped from that side. But coming into the SaaS business, you have all these other metrics. So I had to rely both on the VCs as well as some other founders that I had gotten to know and startup communities. Okay, what do I include in COGS and not? You know, it was pretty easy for me from the consumer brand, like what COGS are, but it's like, what should be SaaS COGS and what's not? And where do I bucket this? And how do I arrange departments? You have to rely a little bit in terms of being transparent to your VC as, well, how do you want us to think about this? What's important to you? And also talking to other founders. So kind of getting to know other founders that are in your space. And that's kind of really important. So one of the things that we did is we're very big in the Shopify space. So we're a certified partner for Shopify. And that kind of opened the doors for me in terms of I got to know some of the CEOs at these other companies and I could chat with them around, how do you do this? Because ultimately you're being valued along the same ways. And that was really important because your P&L is going to be different. The way you structure your P&L is going to be different between a consumer brand and a B2B SaaS company.
Are there any hindsights you think are worth sharing from your experiences getting Dassey to where it is today?
We've gotten to the point where we raised a Series A, so pretty successful from a fundraising perspective. I'd say one thing I think we lost sight of was trying to be as scrappy as we were when we had no money. And that was a little bit driven by the growth at all costs. So I tell people today, definitely always remember sort of be super scrappy, be very frugal, because those dollars are very expensive. So that is one piece of advice that I would give. The other is there's a lot of negative connotation to being corporate, being kind of corporate in your approach. I've worked in really big companies before. Actually, my career started working at Capital One, that is like a massive financial services company. There are things that I've been able to take from that experience and implement at Dassey that have been really good without having that huge corporate sort of burden of rules and regulations. But I think there are things that become really helpful in terms of what do you do around how you run your organization and how you sort of think about your organization. And that's kind of the one advice that I would give to a lot of, especially if you're a startup founder that's never worked in a large organization, seek out some people to understand what some of the things are. There are reasons why some of these like quote COGS work well because they help you run really smoothly. The key is not becoming so corporate where everybody's got like a little box and I'm not allowed to get out of the little box. We all need to understand that it's like shades of gray, not black and white when we're in a startup. But having some of that corporate can be really helpful.
Yeah, yeah. I think I get what you're saying. There's some organizations that are so culture driven, they view rules as like the end of the world. And then some that are so rules driven, it feels like there's no soul in the company, right? And it turns out sometimes you need rules and sometimes you need culture or something beyond rules because there's so much variation. You were talking about being frugal, being scrappy, being hungry. Those are things that, yeah, you can tell your controller, say no more, but it doesn't necessarily teach all of your leaders the behavior that you're really looking for. What are some tips and tricks that you've used to regain that scrappiness?
Yeah, part of it is just transparency. So we actually tell all of our employees how much money we have in the bank every month, which is not something that I think a lot of people do. I want them to understand our position. We also do things like every single one of our employees has shares in the company. So that was something that I learned from a prior company where you only had stock in the publicly traded company if you're above a certain level, and it just created sort of different incentives for people. But I think it's that transparency that we do to try and share that. And then, you know, you obviously don't want to disclose salary information and stuff like that, but you can talk about sort of how much you're spending in different areas as an aggregate. And it's like, okay, it's actually done things like our sales team starts to go, I don't think I should take that flight. Or actually, if I do this, it can be cheaper in terms of my sales, my travel. And that's how you want people to think. It's like they start actually thinking about that piece, especially if you're a startup that isn't profitable, because that defines how long do you have to live. And if you're told, you know what, you're going to be out of job in 12 months unless we hit these benchmarks, nobody wants to go look for a new job. It just changes the dynamic. There is a negative side, which is you can create fear, you can create anxiety, but then that's a question around, have you hired people that you think are a good cultural fit? That's a totally separate discussion.
Yeah. I imagine some of it's in the communication of it too, right? But the bank balance approach is interesting because most people, they throw their financial statements at people and they're like, read this. And most people read it and they learn all the wrong things from it. Things like we spend, you know, you get paid how much? That's kind of an outlier. Like usually salaries aren't in these things, but they focus on the wrong things, right? It takes some education to learn how to read it. And so giving them the little sound bites that convey what you think is like the one or two or three things they should focus on. That makes sense. I like that. Best of luck combining rules and culture. And thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, same here. Really appreciate it. Love a lot of questions. Great discussion.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Hindsight. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a review and be sure to subscribe so you're notified each time a new episode is available.